Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to poker tournament strategy. Now here's your host, Clayton Fletcher.
Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, sponsored by America's Card Room. That's right, ACR. And at ACR, we have huge things planned for this summer. ACR has been making huge moves, including signing today's guest. That's right, you guys. I actually have a guest this week that I cannot wait for you guys to meet. My name is Clayton Fletcher. I'm your host here in beautiful New York City. And it is my pleasure. If I sound excited, guys, it's because I'm so excited to introduce the latest team pro on the America's Card Room roster. He is the number one ranked all-time player in the entire continent of South America. That's number one all-time. He's from Argentina. He is now in Monaco. He was up until like last week or maybe the week before rated number one on the GPI list. This guy has been on fire for about a year and a half, 2 years. He's going to tell us all about it. He's a guy I've known for a long time and obviously an incredible poker player, over $8.8 million in all-time live earnings, and that doesn't even begin to touch the online space. Please welcome, for the first time ever on the podcast, Jose Ignacio Nacho Barbero. Nacho, how you been, buddy?
Hey, what's up, guys?
What do you think of that intro, guys, huh? Great. Did I do a good job?
You did an amazing job.
So what's it like out there in Monaco these days?
Oh, man, Monaco is, I mean, it's beautiful. Like, that is kind of weird. We, like, here is, you feel like everybody is, like, is in another space, you know, like in another league, you know, like even if you have money or whatever, like here, like they have 700 times your, like, network. Like, so you go, to a coffee and, like, and everybody's dressing so good. They're so fancy, so fashion, like a mix between Italy and France, like with all the money. But it's beautiful. The weather is beautiful. Last couple of days it was pretty bad. It was raining, so we kind of had to stay inside and play cards, but, I never seen a better EPT in my life, so it's like the softest field I've seen, and so it's amazing. Like, I never seen like more recreational players in like one tournament. So it's very 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 good, very juicy.
Wow, what do you think is causing that, Nacho? Like, why do you think there are so many recreationals in these Monte Carlo tournaments and stuff?
Honestly, I mean, it might sound weird, but I heard like last year it was, you know, last year we were still with COVID, like people didn't want to travel too much. If you were like, let's say if you were 70 years old or 60, you were be scared to be like around people without, you know, like talking to you and stuff. So I'm pretty much it's because of that, because people really wanted to like travel after a couple of years. And I heard like last year Monaco was really, really bad, but this year also I heard EPT Paris was amazing, but this, I never seen anything like this. I mean, yesterday there was a one day 25K. I didn't play it, but there were half of the field were recreationals.
Half?
On the final table, yes, 9 players, 7 recreationals, 2 pros.
Wow.
You can, that's for you to make an idea how soft this is. I mean, obviously they can play, but I mean, I'd rather play against a recreational against that Isaac Haxton, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
Like,
yeah, nobody wants to play against Isaac Haxton. I mean, I was looking for, you might remember this, Nacho, I was looking for a soft field a few years ago. I arrived in Vegas a few days before the World Series of Poker started, and there wasn't really that much going on yet. Everything was kind of like getting geared up. And I was like, let me just jump into this little $600 tournament at the Venetian. It'll be fun. Maybe I can have a drink and relax and play against some recreational guys. And then who's at my table? You, Carlos Mortensen, and Daniel Strelitz, and that was at our table with seven players. And oh man, that was not the $600 tournament I had in mind. Do you even remember that? It was a while back.
Well, no, I can't recall it actually. Yeah. I remember hanging out with you in Sweden, didn't we?
Yeah, with Anton and some other guys. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I remember that I went to see one of your shows.
Yeah.
But yeah, it rings me a bell, that small tournament. But honestly, I actually played one $600 on the win the other day, but I usually don't play that small, at least it's World Series.
Yeah,
so sure. It's kind of rare. Like, that has to be like way back.
Yeah, and we had all these pros at the table. It was horrible. You kept calling Carlos Martinson. You kept calling him Carlito.
Oh, Carlitos, yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I kind of know. I kind of remember it actually now. Yeah. I'm a bit burnt out. I've been playing so much poker, guys. So, like, I mean, if I'm a bit slow to remember some stuff or like whatever, it's like.
That's okay, man. Listen, I'm just happy you're here with me. I'm looking at your Hendemob, and just for this year, guys, it's barely May. And you've already had an unbelievable year. I mean, you got fourth place in the PSPC main event in the Caribbean. You got first place in the Triton Super High Roller in Vietnam. You got another first place, a 10K PLO on the Poker Go Tour. I mean, you have just, I've never seen anything like this. You are about as hot as can be right now. You're final tabling like every tournament you play. So, you know, what's going on? What's the secret?
First of all, I mean, I've been really taking care of myself. I get to the tournament and in always the same. Like, I wake up, I do like this, you know, Wim Hof breathing techniques. I do the Wim Hof, so I pretty much like I just like release all my stress before going to the tournament. Then after that, I go to the gym. Sorry, before the tournament still. I go to the gym and I work out and I usually fast till like today I fasted like till 4 p.m. So I usually eat between a window between today I ate between 4 and 9. So basically I all the rest of the day I just don't eat anything. Like I just drink like maybe coffee, so I'm trying to avoid it, or like I usually don't drink coffee 5 hours before going to bed. Like I'm trying to do like exactly the same, because that thing has been working for me, and I mean like my body and my mind like just like works way better. Like people don't realize how bad it is to be like just stuffing your body with food, and like it makes you laggier, you know, like and you're like I'm there like playing like against the best in the world, and I need to be light. My brain has to be like super sharp, and like I need to like have my body and my mind the best possible way to like deal with those situations. Whenever like you say, I see all the people like they're like eating breakfast, eating so much. I'm like, that is just so bad, you know. Like you go to play poker after like eating breakfast. I mean like so much. Why? Like. Your body is digesting the food. Your brain is like occupied with other stuff. I mean, your body like can't handle it. If you're super light, you have nothing in your thing. You're like super awake, super sharp. Obviously, after everything I told you that I did, I do like the meditation, like the breathing techniques. Then I go to the gym, and you know, like it's been paying off, you know, because and then obviously, I mean, you have to study a lot. I've been studying a lot and like just watching replays, a lot of with GTO Wizard. I'm doing all the things. I've been studying also a lot of mixed games. So it's just like putting a lot of time. I mean, my life has been kind of boring, honestly. I've been just playing so much.
Yeah.
Actually, I went with a friend. I went with a friend and a couple of girls to Tulum, like just before coming here, and I went to Costa Rica to go to the America's Card Room headquarters, and it was amazing. That was fun. Like I had like 10 days know poker.
Yeah. And so what did you think of Costa Rica? Was that your first time there?
No, actually, no. This is my fourth time. I really like it. I love the... Have you been?
Yeah, I've been. Really good coffee there. Everybody talks about Colombia, but I really like the Costa Rican coffee.
Yeah, they have great coffee. They have great beaches.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of San Jose, but all the rest is amazing. I'm actually planning another trip to go over there on August.
Nice.
So I'm gonna go to see the part of the island, or no, of the coast that I didn't see, because I went to the Pacific and now I'm gonna go to the Atlantic coast.
Nice.
They have like very different beaches.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I recommend to everybody. They have if you like nature, like white water rafting.
Mm-hmm.
Times volcanoes, like a lot of animals, like iguanas, and it's beautiful. Like it's really, really like it's like jungle. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it is beautiful. Rainforest, yeah. Jungle, all that good stuff. So that's great. You know, it is so important. I think it's so important, Nacho. Like we have to enjoy our lives. Yes, we study hard. Yes, we play hard. But yeah, you have to. What's it all for? I mean, you're up 2.5 million. Or so this year, and it's only May. You got to take some time, enjoy your success, enjoy your money, enjoy your vacation, and you know, make sure that you're ready for the next thing. Tell us a little bit about signing with ACR. What does that mean to you?
I'm very happy, honestly. I really like the brand, and I get along really well with Phil Nagy, and so. Honestly, when we went there, like to the headquarters, it was like they treated us so well. So we met everybody from every department. Like sometimes, you know, it's just like speak on the phone, you know, like or you text them and you have no idea, and then who they are, and then like you get to meet them and like hang out with them. It's a really, you know, like it's more like a family. ACR, it's not like a big company, you know. Even though they have like 400 employees or 500, I don't even know. It's just more like Phil tries to keep it very, very that he knows everybody. Like, I mean, he doesn't want to be like a multinational. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
so.
Sure.
And they talking about ACR. They're gonna rebrand the whole brand. It's not gonna be called anymore America's Car Room. It's gonna be called only ACR. And it's coming out the 5th of June, I think. And they renew all the software, and it's gonna be insane. We saw it, and it's gonna be like the best, honestly.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
A scoop here, everybody. You heard it here first from one of the ACR team pros that we're gonna have new software.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's not a secret. And yeah, so they're rebranding the whole brand, and it's just amazing the job they did. It's just like they're gonna kick ass. They're gonna take it to the next level. Honestly, like what's coming is it's insane.
Fantastic. So I want to ask you about studying, because a minute ago you said that you've been spending a lot of time studying. I want to learn. How somebody that has your level of success can study and still improve, because it seems to me like you're already one of the best in the world, so who can you learn from? So before you answer that, let me just tell everybody, if you're not yet a member of ACR, there's a link in the description of this podcast. All you have to do is click that, and you can receive a first-time deposit bonus up to $2,000, 100% of your deposit, all the way up to $2,000, just by using a promo code TPE. So, Nacho, now that you had a chance to think about that, tell me about studying poker at your very high level.
I don't have a coach for No Limit Hold'em, but I mean all on the I mean I did have coach for like for PLO and for mixed games, but. On what I use for No Limit Hold'em is I just watch all the replays, what I'm seeing, and I just put the spots you put the spots that you see to see how they played. So you put them, let's say you see a hand that is interesting and you just see, okay, and you go and you put it on GTO Wizard and like tells you, I mean, what's the best play, if they're actually kind of playing GTO, if they deviate from GTO, or like you just can train against, like there is also, you just can train against the GTO players, and or you can put all the spots, like let's say I come with a hand that I wasn't sure if I made the right decision, you just put it over there and like it tells you exactly what the game optimal theory is. Like honestly, I mean, I've been playing for 21 years. I mean, I started on 2002, so I play a lot, you know, like because I know the spots, and I also because I've been there so many times that it's just flows to me. But for other people that they're not like experienced, I mean, it's they have to study like 5 times what I studied probably, or even 10 times.
I was just going to say, if you've been playing since 02, you've seen how the game has changed so much since then. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, the game changed the same, but I mean, it changed a lot. But if you, let's say, it's not that difficult, you know, if you watch every, like, let's say, Super Millions final table that you can watch them on Tuesdays, like, you watch exactly what they're doing, how they're approaching, like, every ICM spots on the final tables, and then if you have a doubt, you just can put it, like, on holding resources, or, like, you just, like, sorry, or, like, or you put it on GTO Wizard, or, like, you run it, or I ask even my brother, like, for spots, like, when I'm not there, like, on the computer to run it, whatever, and, like, from there, with that, you can learn way easier, like, that being, like, I'm not playing, like, 10 tables online every day that I have to know, like, every ICN spot's, like, perfect. Like, besides, this is gonna sound very, very weird, but, like, I say something that is so funny. It says, ICM is for the poor people. So, like... So like honestly, like I mean, you won't believe this, but like I barely, like I don't really care about like the patient or anything. I just want to play to win, and I'm gonna make the decision. The other day I passed, like I was serving chips. I think on a final table in Poker Go, at 200k for first, we were 6 left, and. Like I really did like an old school play. Like I 5-bet against the chip leader. Like he was on the bottom, I was on the small line, and the big line was very short. He had 10 blinds, and like I ended up 5-betting king jack off because I thought like he was so light so many times on that situation, but you know like that the solver wouldn't do it, and I know it's wrong. But you know, like I'm more like a field player. If I feel like this guy, that the situation is this guy doesn't have it, I'm just gonna go for it. You know, like you still have to, like this is funny. But for example, like Helmut the other day, he won a tournament, Poker Go, right? And yeah. He wasn't part of. He opened on my big line, and I 3-bet him from the big line. I had ace 4 off, and he snap shoved 50 blinds, snap. Like, he looked at me, and he, I don't know, he picked up something or whatever, like, he snapshot 50 blinds. I folded, and he shows me 7-9 suited.
For like, 50 blinds?
Yeah, for 50 blinds. And he ended up winning the tournament. So you say, yeah, of course, you have to understand, I mean, you have to understand, I have, what are the solver frequencies, where they're going to bluff. What are the combos that when they get to a river that they're barreling on the turn, they're barreling in the river, how they bet on the flop, what they check back, everything. Okay, you have to understand that. But after all that, after you understand, then you have to deviate and like you have to play the player. Helmut fucking look at me and he say this motherfucker doesn't have it. I shot 50 blinds and he made in nine blinds on the hand, you know, like we no show them. So, you know what I mean? It's like, it looks, you don't have it, and he goes for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what poker should be.
Well, you can't argue with his success, can you? I mean, he's done quite well in the game for many, many years, like before we started. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. If it ain't broken, don't fix it.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like I watch all these guys. I'm studying all the spots. But at the end of the day, you know, I mean, I do a lot of street poker that. Like very, very street poker. Like let's say yesterday I was playing on the 25K like 2 days ago, and I was playing against one hand against Coco Jumbo, and it's like it's Fisoka on it's like Onya Dima or something. He's like a insane player, like so good, and he's under the gun. He opens. I'm under the gun to like 700 or 600 table or something like that. I have 35 blinds. He opens 2 blinds. I 3 bet to 5 blinds. He looks at me and I was like, he's not, I feel it. He's not very sure or whatever. And he shoves. So they're like, no, you know, like against exactly that stack, like the solver loves to shove like A6 suited. Like he's shoving like maybe 7s, 8s, 9s, 10s, like so many hands, and I had ace jack off, and I'm like, I ended up calling because I felt like he didn't have it, and he turned up king queen, and like I doubled to like almost 80 blinds. That's very street poker. That's the solver wouldn't do that, wouldn't play that hand. It would never happen that hand, but it would never happen what he did too. Like he did street poker too, because the solver doesn't, like, you know what I mean? If you put the spot. It's never 3-bet call, 35 blinds, UTG-1 against Tushido. But it's also never all-in, king-queen off against my 3-bet under the gun, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know the theory, whatever, but at the end of the day, it's just two people playing cards. Like, they're, like you do what you think is best for the hand.
Yeah, so you're not afraid to go against something that you know the solver wouldn't do because... of the spot or the situation or the opponent. And yeah, I mean, we're not playing against robots just yet. We're still playing against people.
Yeah, exactly. You're playing against people, and yeah, and the people, they make mistakes and they don't play CDO, and they like, and everybody deviates, and like, and you can exploit it too.
Yeah.
And CDO is perfect also against like, a shitty old opponent, you know, like he's not playing like against a human. So
right.
it's kind of like a marginal situation.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And I could pick your brain all day and just hear the way you approach the game and how you think about it, because it's so interesting to me. But I did promise you I won't keep you on the phone all night. So why don't we talk about a hand? I think you said you had a hand you wanted to discuss with me.
Okay, it's one of the hands that when I won on Triton, this hand was like, you know, like some tournaments you have like one breaking hand, you know, like on the hand, like one breaking point that is like that hand like takes you and you win the tournament, you know, like sometimes like. So here is I'm gonna give you guys the thing.
Okay, so this is a $15,000 buy-in, a seven-handed.
$25,000.
Oh, this is the 25K.
$15K. You're right.
15K. Okay. Yeah, this is the one that you end up winning.
And I finished on the next day, second on the 25K.
Okay.
So this guy, this Las Saunicas. It's a horse of Ponakovs that I think is one of the best.
Okay.
Ponakovs.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Lithuanian player, very, very good. So, like, the tournament is 110 left, 172 people started. So, like, it's like pretty much just started. Average stack is 312,000 or 31 blinds.
Mm-hmm.
And the blinds are 5-10.
I started him with 385K. Oh, actually, I have 405 and he has 385.
Okay.
He's on the small line, on the big line.
Okay, great.
Okay. He raises 3X. We have ace of clubs, 10 of diamonds.
Okay.
What do you guys do?
All right, so the small blind opens to 3X. Now, a lot of times in these type of tournaments, Nacho, I've been seeing the small blind is limping in a lot. Was this guy doing that before? Have you? It's kind of early, right? So you haven't really had a chance to see.
I didn't have quite a chance to see if he was limping or racing that much. I'm going to just tell you, there is a lot of limping on 40 blinds, for sure. So, yeah, I don't know. He opens 3X. We cover him for like one blind. We have 40. Let's say we have 40 blind effective. So make it exactly, because he has exactly 39 blinds after the race. What do you guys do?
Well, I'm pretty sure the solver's going to have us three betting here. I don't know. I mean, there's a good case for calling. You keep his weaker aces in, then they might just fold if you three bet. You're going to have position on him the rest of the hand. And if you happen to be behind, maybe you can preserve the stack. But yeah, I guess I would probably make it about eight big blinds myself. But I can see the case for calling. What did you do?
Well, first of all, we got to understand, what did I do? I just called.
Okay.
Why? There are a couple of things that I like about calling here besides, and I talk about many players in this hand. First of all, you're going to get into a bad spot if the guy shoves. And they're not going to be folding much, like nines, eights. All the pairs are going to jam. They might jam like A6 suited too. Although, saying that, I'm pretty sure that the A6 suited he limps. So we're going to take out both of the range. So pretty much, if you 3-bet there and they shove, his range is very condensed of hands that they have you in bad shape. So you don't want that. Because his hands are going to be like maybe between fives and like all the overpairs, five, six, sevens, eight, nines, tens, all that. Maybe some king queens off that he just goes for it. And I think king jack off and king ten, he's limping. He's not raising those. So he's going to have kings, queens, like a lot of like all the value, but ace queens, even ace jack maybe sometimes, probably he calls ace jack anyway. So what you accomplish there with the 3-bet, I would pick up like a much worse hand to 3-bet there, that not ace 10. Like whenever he shoves on you, he's going to have you crash. So I think it's a huge mistake if you 3-bet there. I think it's 100% call preflop.
Okay. And especially if he's not going to be 3Xing his suited ace 5, ace 4.
Yeah, exactly. So let's say this. If you have deuces there, pocket deuces, he's going to limp deuces, right? So pretty much if he raises, I think he has like a hand, even deuces, 3s, 4s, 5s. I think he has 6s plus. You know, 6s plus and a lot of rags. A lot of like rag, like 6-5 suited. He opened those 6-4 suited, 7-8 suited, and 8-4 suited. All those hands, so he has to mix it up with the value range. So he mixes all that, and he raises like 8, 9, 10 jacks, like all those, and ace queen, queens, like maybe some ace jack suited. That's maybe 50-50 raises, 50-50 he limps. So I think, yeah. So his range is kind of polarized to be like pairs over the sixes or sevens, and I think, in my opinion, and like some trashy hands, suited trashy hands, and like monsters like ace, ace, king, king, queen, queen, ace, king, ace, queen, right? Okay, so I think calling is better option, so we call. Flop comes queen, four, deuce, two hearts. We have ace of clubs, ten of diamonds.
Okay. We have nothing at all.
Nothing at all. He bets like 30%. So he bet or 25K. I think we have only one option here, right? I mean, it's like not even complicated, the option.
Well, we're not going to fold, that's for sure.
So racing is pretty bad, I think. So you have only one option, calling, I think.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, we're going to call and see what happens on 4th Street.
Here,
yeah.
Here is the most interesting part, I think, of the hand, one of the most interesting. Now it comes a king, right? So now there is like 110 on the middle, and he bets 100.
Oh, wow.
He bets pot. So what I'm thinking here, okay, let's go to see what's, so now what do you do first? And then I tell you what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, this is tough. Maybe I don't want to go to play in the Triton tournament because, I'm going to fold here. We have ace high. I know we have a gut shot. It's just too big a bet for too much of my stack, and I don't know. I mean, I guess I could shove, but that seems a little bit wild and crazy. I don't know. I mean, his bet is kind of polarizing, right? Like he could have nothing. He could have Jack 10. He could have a lot of hands, I guess, that might just be bluffing here. But yeah, I guess I would, to be honest, I would fold now. Yeah, I would.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So this is what I want you to guys to like how you guys have to think about poker. Okay. So now, I spend like a lot of time on seeing this hand. So what I think here is like he never has Jack 10 besides we're blocking because Jack 10 limps preflop suited and offsuit, so he doesn't have those. What about the kings? Which kings he has? So he has, for me, he has ace king, king queen. And maybe king jack suited, but maybe they usually limp because they wanna, let's say they raise and you have like king three off, you fold like so many times, so they don't wanna. Or like let's say you have like jack three off and they open king jack suited from the small and you're just gonna fold those and he has you dominated, like they don't wanna make you fold your like worst jacks. So basically king jack and king 10 they limp reflop, so he doesn't have those. He doesn't have two pairs pretty much in king deuce four because like he's not opening like king four suited, king deuce suited.
Right, he's not so three-axing with those hands, right? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He's limping though. He doesn't have deuce, he doesn't have fours because he limps too. So for me, his value range is more like aces, ace king, king queen, ace king, and ace queen, but he checks on the turn. He never bets pot.
Yeah, he can't have ace queen. I agree, he doesn't have ace queen, and a lot of the hands you just named, we
ace queen. He uses another sizing on the turn because he wants to leave you in tie with a worse queen. He's not like he's not betting pot. He doesn't bet pot. He bets 50%. He bets any other sizing, but he never has ace queen. He might check.
We
but
can
what
rule
I'm
that out.
Here, he never. So his hand is so condensed to be like the nuts. And I'm blocking a lot of the nuts because I'm blocking ace king, I'm blocking aces, and I don't think he ever has ace jack there because like I don't think he's betting pot with ace jack, honestly. Like he's beating so much. I mean, like he doesn't even have to bet pot like with ace jack. Like it seems like very stupid. Like if you're betting pot, that you're like way worse bluffs than having ace jack there. He might check, he might bet smaller, and probably like, you know, like that's not a hand. Like you have so much. He's beating like 50% of my range, so he's not gonna be like betting pot with like a hand that he has me. Let's say I have, I don't know, like jack three of hearts, or like I have hearts, I have like ace three that is, you know, like ace high and a gut shot. I can have ace four, like ace jack is just crushing my range, so he doesn't kind of have ace jack either. So I think he's so condensed to having like complete trash or having like the top value range, king queen, ace ace, king king or king queen, right? So I'm like, okay, wait, his bluffs are way much more, you know. He has like all the 6-5 of hearts, 7-8 of hearts, 8-9 of hearts, 10-9 of hearts, jack-9 of hearts. Like if you put like there are like an infinite way more, like not only those, like then there is like the, let's say he opened 6-3 suited, you know, he has 6-3 of spades and he came king queen, like now the king hits his range way more than me, So he's going to barrel those too. You know, he has a gut shot. Let's say he has 6-5 of spades. He's going to use the king as barrel, you know, too, because he's like, he still has a gut shot. They're not like king queen. So I think he like, here, like the value range is like way, is super condensed to be like really like honestly like 5 hands or like maybe 6 hands, and like all the rest is bluff or like missed draws or like you know. So I call. It's kind of wild because now you know that you call pot and now the pot is makes 300k and he has 280 behind, you know, like
yeah.
So yeah, exactly that, because he made it 130. Yeah, exactly. He had like 280. I think he showed 280 exactly on the river.
That's a big call.
Yeah, that's a big. And then the river came a really, really bad card for me actually. That I didn't like it. It was the five. It was a five offsuit five. That kind of sucks. Sucks in a lot of ways, because. But sucks, and it doesn't suck. I'm gonna explain you what I'm thinking now here. Okay. And now the opening shoves. What do you do?
I mean, look, man, you made the big call on the turn because you thought ace high was good.
You have to call, yeah. But that five is kind of But what I saw also on that five is like, if I, let's say he has this five, is that those hands we were telling, right? The 6-5 suited, the 7-5 of hearts. I don't even know if he shoves those hands because he's betting. First of all, that can be my gut shot in many situations. And also he's betting my deuce, he's beating my deuce, he's beating like majority of my ace highs, he's beating my four. He's beating a lot. I don't even know if he turns that five into a bluff. I don't know if he's trying to make me fold the queen there or like, so I mean, I don't know. Like I still think like, it's like once you call the turn there, you just have to close your eyes and call the river.
Is that what you did?
No, I mean, I really explained you exactly what I thought he had. You won't believe what he actually had.
Tell us.
Because it's not going to make any sense. He had A3 of clubs.
What?
So he had a block three. And yeah, the hand was like a 80 big line pot, and it was like huge. Yeah, but like the idea of the hand is like when his value range is so condensed to be like the nuts. I mean, okay, bro, like, sure, show me the nuts. Really, you have aces? Really, you have kings and queens here? Or you hit a miracle, you know, ace. He hit a miracle. The five was kind of bad, because, like, if he has 6-3 suited, like, he was making the nuts straight. But, you know, he has so much money on the pot, and you just, like, okay, he has, like, 4 or 5 value hands, and like you're beating all the rest, you know. Like, I think it was a good call overall, and that led me into winning the tournament.
Wow. So after that hand, are we chip leader in this thing?
Yeah, or I was close to it pretty much. I mean, I don't know. I don't remember, like, but I was like probably like tucked after that. Yeah, I mean, like, so it was, I think it was very interesting hand, and like more to how to deconstruct the other people range, you know. That's like what I think is very important. So when you take out like in that hand that you take like exactly on the flop, that he doesn't have deuces, he doesn't have fours, he doesn't have the king X, he just has king queen, aces, ace king, kings or queens, it's kind of makes it pretty easy to play, you know, like one hand. He has both. You know, no, I know, but I mean, yeah, okay, they can have them, but I mean, it's unlikely to have like kings, queens, or ace king, especially when you're blocking. Wow. Or aces when you're blocking one ace.
Jeez, so you call him down with ace high. I mean, look, from listening to you describe your thought process in that hand, Nacho, I am sure that you and I are not playing the same game. I mean, that is a wild call. And, yeah, I'm glad it worked out. But, you know, even hearing the part of how you're worried, right, about the five, like, I think many players in your shoes wouldn't see that five as, you know, such a bad card.
The five was terrible. It was one of the worst cards of the deck. I would have preferred it came a deuce, a four, a seven. Like, you have no idea, anything. Like, the worst cards were, like, the 10, a heart. Heart was really bad. I was falling on hearts. That's when you have ace 10 with no hearts, he's more likely to have hearts.
Right.
So yeah, so those were worse cars actually. Pretty yeah, like, but the 5 is really bad. It's what up there one of the worst cars, like literally one of the worst cars. Because if he hits the 8, let's say he hits the 8 now in that spot, he's just gonna check. Because he's beating so much, as I explained you before. Like, he's gonna just like, okay, yeah, this hand is like 50%. Like, he's never gonna sham, like, turn an 8 into a bluff in that when he's beating my 7, 6s, ace 5, my ace highs that I get to the river with. And besides, let's say, also, the 8 is, let's say he hits the 8 on the river, it's such a good bluff catcher for him, too. Cause let's say now I call, let's say came 4 deuce. Let's say now I have like a hand like a 6-5 of hearts. I have that. I have to bluff that river. So that 8 makes him like an insane like bluff catcher for him. Like, it's like, he's such a good, he will never bet that 8, you know, on into, or let's say he has ace queen there. He has like the best bluff catcher in the world. Or maybe he has queen, let's say he has queen shark suited and he open breed. He has like literally the best bluff catcher in the world. So he's just gonna never shove those. He, you know that he never has a hand. He's always check calling that hand because he wants you to like turn, you know, like just bluff with your like missed draws or like your like gut shots or like open ended that you didn't hit. Like, let's say you have 3-5 suited and you call on the flop and you call on the turn. But I think you're not calling on the turn though because you're like, you're not calling pot on the turn. Anyway, right. But let's say you have Jack nine. Let's say you have Jack nine of hearts in the hand. You have to bluff the river, right? You have to.
Like, yeah, you have to.
You can't just check back.
You got that bar. You have to bluff. So the eight becomes a great bluff catcher. And now when you're describing how he wouldn't shove with the hand like Queen Jack, it does demonstrate for all of us that his value range is quite small. And his bluffing range is quite large, which is why you can call him with ace high there. But still, that's not an easy call, man. That's not easy at all.
Yeah, no, that's not easy, obviously. I mean, but yeah, you got to make, I mean, if I tell you, like, the hands, like, I made the most money on these Tritons on, like, here, like, they were, like, even one, there was one in TV that you guys can go watch on the bubble, like, that was a pretty insane hand, too. Like, the guy, like, I limped a king X suited and the guy rolled 3.5x and then he came king high, two hearts. I check call, third came a heart, I check call, river came the four heart on the bubble and the guy just put me almost all in and on the TV table and all that. And I'm like there, you know, on the river, like, what is this guy betting? Like, he was like, there was king of hearts and 10 of hearts on the river. So basically I'm like, this guy is like really ripping like two hands, the ace of hearts or like the queen of hearts. I don't even think he goes that hard with the jack of hearts, you know, like.
No, I don't think so either.
Exactly. So you're there, you know, like, okay, whatever, it's the bubble, but you have to call, you know, and I call and the guy has 7 deuce off, you know, no, whatever. And that was the 15K that I won. That was another, just with like, that was with 24 left or 25 left and the bubble was 25. And I just hero called my whole stack. Like, so you to understand that, like, for the people to understand that the money is on first prize. It's not on the mini cash. You play in a 25K tournament and you mean cash for 50K. And when you like put two bullets on the tournament or whatever, and your life tomorrow is going to be the same. But if you make 600K, you're going to be happy.
Yeah, very, very happy. And this is something that I say a lot. I'm like you. I don't really pay that much attention to ICM. I mean, I don't have the kind of bankroll that you do. But all the tournaments I play, man, I always go for the win. I never said that ICM is for poor people. But it does make me laugh to hear you say that. But yeah, I think it's important to... All the money's up top, man. That's where it's at. So go for it.
Exactly. So if you if you have a marginal situation and you say, okay, this is going to get me close to the, this is going to get me into the money, or this is going to make my chances of winning the tournament, they're going to be much higher. Obviously, when there is 24 left and you double from 50 blinds to 100 blinds, it makes a huge difference. You know? You can navigate way easier.
Yeah, and your chances of making the final table from there are so much better than when you had 50 blinds.
But it's okay, you know, I understand, especially when you're playing, like, when you're playing with the different bankrolls or whatever, like, I understand, like, it's also very important to look at the ICM and say, okay, yeah, I'm going to make the scene. But this is what's worked for me through the years, and I'm not going to change it, you know, like, I should, besides, I play to, because I like to win, you know, like, I want to win, I don't want to. Nobody remembers who came 14 on the tournament.
You're so right about that. Well, I mean, look, whatever you're doing, just keep doing it because it is working, man. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anybody have this kind of run. I mean, it is ridiculous. And what you did in 2022, also ridiculous. So I'm rooting for you. I hope to see you. Are you coming to Vegas this summer? Of course you are, right?
Yeah, of course. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be. I think I'm going to start with the 25K 6 max.
Nice.
Very, very looking forward to play the World Series. I'm very, very, very excited.
Yeah, well, it's less than a month away. I'll be performing in Las Vegas June 2nd and 3rd with the great Jim Jefferies at the Mirage. So the show's at 10 o'clock. Wow. So if you happen to bust up whatever tournament you're playing on that Friday or Saturday and you want to come out and laugh with us, it's going to be a really good time. So I hope you can make it.
Yeah, for sure. I'll 100% if I'm not playing, I go.
All right, promise. My brother. Well, what else do you want people to know before I say goodbye to you, Nacho?
Honestly, it's super late here. I would rather just call it now. And if you want to have me another day, I have no problem. But
listen, you spent a lot of time with us, and I appreciate you so much. And congratulations again on the sponsorship with ACR.
Thank you, Clayton. It was very fun. I hope the people enjoyed. Yeah, I need to see you one of your stand-ups.
Yeah, come out and see me and Jim Jefferies at the Mirage. You guys, thank you once again to my first-time guest, but not the last time, the newest member of the ACR professional team. And so for everyone here at Tournament Poker Edge, and for all of our friends and our very generous sponsor, ACR, I'm Clayton Fletcher. Thank you so much for listening.
I want to hold them like they do in Texas, please. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. Luck and intuition, play the cards with babes to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart.
She can't read.